Check this out.
It is time.
Check it out, y'all.
You are now about to witness.
And it goes a little something like this.
Alexander Ovechkin curl and drag to the back end. He scores! Simply sensational! Brodeur looking for the goal. Down the ice. Score! Martin Brodeur!
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome back to another edition of the Game Time Decision Podcast, continuing along with our hockey analytics series. Last week we had Ryan Stimson on. This week, one of his podcast co-hosts, we've got Dawson, also known as DTM About Heart on Twitter. Dawson, thank you so much for joining me today. It's a pleasure.
Well, thanks for having me on.
I have so many questions for you because you've been really on the forefront of this latest wave of statistical movement and advancing us into the next realm of hockey statistics with your WAR stats, your goals above replacement stats, your expected plus minus. We're going to cover all of that today. But let's start it off. I open this with the same question to each panelist, which is basically, if you had to give someone who was unaware of the state of hockey analytics and that community, how would you describe where we are, where we're going, and where we've been?
I think hockey analytics right now is at still at the forefront, I'd say. I think we've picked most of the low-hanging fruit, and it's going to take some time to get to the next stages of it, but I think it's in a good place right now. Progress has stalled a little bit, probably, just because, I don't know, I think there's been some issues with thinking outside the box, and but I think it's on the right track, I'd say.
Okay. If someone was looking to get into hockey analytics, of course, number one thing you do, go and read Dawson's WAR Primer on Hockey Graphs. You can find all of his work there, hockey-graphs.com. But who else would you suggest newcomers reading just to get their minds wrapped around what it is this these new statistics are about?
I would just, you know, it depends if you have a basis or not. If you don't have a basis in, you know, hockey stats, I would just read everything you can. That's kind of how I got started into it. Like, I didn't even join Twitter till after a year of just kind of like following along with this stuff. And I just read everything I could. And, you know, I still try to read pretty much everything that comes out and stay on top of stuff. But I think just reading everything, Eric Tulski, who's the analyst for the Carolina Hurricanes right now, a lot of his stuff is still up on the SB Nation networks. He had his own site called Outnumbered, I believe, and he has a lot of good stuff up there. He was a really good and clear writer, so I'd usually recommend people start with Eric's work, and then, you know, I'll say go back through some of the Hockey Graph stuff. I think we're updating the site soon, so it'll be a little easier to navigate and find older posts, but yeah, those are my recommendations.
Yeah, no, we've basically, this series has just been going down the author list of Hockey Graphs. All of the stuff there is fantastic. If you're looking to get into this community to learn more, you know, there's definitely stuff you've missed. There's so much, just a wealth of knowledge there. But let's get into the work that you've been doing and that you've been putting up. And let's start it off with, what is WAR or wins above replacement and GAR or goals above replacement?
It's meant to kind of be an all-inclusive metric, but also meant not to be. It started out kind of as just a project for myself. You know, I've seen pretty much the big sports that have it now are baseball and basketball with different versions. Hockey actually has a lot of similarities to basketball and kind of the stats that they use, the all-in-one metrics. But I wanted to just kind of see if I could develop one for hockey because I know it has a lot of usefulness. I've seen, you know, articles in baseball that they evaluate a GM's trade record by comparing, you know, the amount of wins that they ended up trading for or trading away and stuff like that. So I just thought it would be, you know, a useful tool. And I think hockey had an issue where there's a lot of stats out there and people didn't, or I still think it's an issue that people don't know how to weight certain things properly. Like, I've asked people a lot, like, what's more important, goals or assists? And you get a million different answers from people. Or if you say you have a player who has good relative possession numbers on a bad team, or a player with bad relative possession numbers on a good team, what's better? And you get a million different answers from people. So I think there was you know, the goal of the analytics stuff is try to get more objective answers. And, you know, while these stats helped, I still think there was a little too much subjectivity in the decision making, and a lot of people are just the opinions that were out there. So I tried to help fix that by, you know, creating a little all-in-one. And, you know, I've said it's not perfect, but it's definitely on the right track, and I think it helps make things better. And, you know, I've gotten some good feedback and some improvements I'll probably make on it in the next edition.
And if someone wants to go out, they can check your whole five-part explainer piece on these two statistics. It's phenomenal. It can be a much more in-depth look at it. But just for those who haven't taken a look at it briefly, what are the key components that you take into when you're measuring a player's wins above replacements?
So the first one is, I guess we can go to this expected plus minus, which is how I incorporate shot attempts, of course, expected, into players' value, and I use expected goals. But it's a expected plus minus is the result of basically a huge regression that tells you the impact of each individual player while simultaneously, you know, controlling for all the other factors that a lot of people had to do post hoc. So whereas traditional analysis, you know, kind of up to this point was, be, you know, you'd see a player's shot attempt numbers and you say, all right, well, their teammates are this good, so let's kind of tweak it this much, and then they play against this quality of competition, or they start these zone starts here, and then, you know, you have people kind of subjectively tuning it to what they think is an appropriate level. Whereas, you know, a big regression like expected plus minus kind of takes all of that under the hood, and it lets the regression account for each of those factors, so you get a much less subjective view of each player's individual impact. And that's kind of what I hope to get with expected plus minus. And it's been around before. Brian McDonald with the Florida Panthers has written, I think, 3 papers on it, back in 2010 timeframe. And, you know, the idea was first introduced into basketball probably around 2008. And, you know, it's become so big that it's on, you know, sites like ESPN have a thing called Real Plus Minus, which is kind of sort of the same thing, little tweaks, but it has become very mainstream in basketball, and I think that's because the acceptance came a lot sooner, and I hope that's where hockey will get to, because I think, you know, these kind of stats, you know, mine and then Manuel Perry's, you know, K-Stat, I think these types of metrics are the future, really, of hockey analytics.
And how would you recommend that people use your stat? Because you've talked about this a bit in the past, that you said you wanted it to be used as a inclusive stat, but also how maybe there's more to it as well. How would you recommend people looking to use your stat effectively and to present that knowledge in the appropriate way do so?
I think the first part is you start with a grand view when looking at a player, and then you work down to the details. I think it's the most time saving method. So, you know, you can start looking at, you know, what is their goals above replacement overall, or what's their wins above replacement. And then that in itself is made up of 6 different categories. So you can say, you know, maybe they don't drive shot attempts, but, you know, when they're on the ice, they're not taking penalties and they're drawing power plays for your team. So that puts your team on the power play, which means you're scoring more goals, and, you know, you don't really give up shorthanded goals that often. So not only you're scoring more, but you're allowing less over a certain number of minutes, so that helps. And then even the shot attempt numbers currently as I have them, it's a component of expected plus minus, which I had before, and box plus minus, which is basically, you know, goals, assists. It kind of tries to blend them all together to get to one number. So you can really break up and see what a player does well and, you know, maybe what translates or something. Because if you just look at, you know, one number, it can definitely be misleading with stuff like maybe it was a fluke year and they took a lot of penalties. But you can look at it over their career and say, you know, this player doesn't really take a lot of penalties. So projecting forward, we probably, you know, should adjust our view that way. So I think starting grand and looking at the big picture, and then you can get into the more minute details that way. And I think that's what these kind of stats help, is make snap easy, quick decisions to help organize players.
Now, if you're if you're someone looking at the WAR statistic, would you recommend that they also be looking at their possession numbers as well beside it, or should it be something you're more focusing on, you know, their special teams player, their deployments, or their box score numbers, so you get a better picture of who they are, because to a certain degree your statistic does take in their possession numbers.
Yeah, no, I think I hopefully account for it. I think mainly you want to look at, you know, just like the expected plus minus portion of the stat for that, because I think that gives a better indication. Obviously, the issue gets into players with limited playing time who haven't played a lot. Maybe you have to make a decision on that. And then, you know, you can look at more classical, like, on-off analysis. You know, how does the team do on the ice versus off the ice? But when you get to, you know, players with more experience, you can start looking at these other methods, because, you know, after a while, simply looking at, on versus off stats, it gets a little too simplified, in the sense, like, you'd hope that you'd be able to account for other factors, such as, you know, who are their teammates constantly, and then, you know, fine-tuning, our evaluation of that player that way.
And how does that work for, I'm thinking of pairing like the Sedins, where they play so consistently with each other, how is it either difficult to, or how are you able to account for the fact that they are on the ice constantly together, so their play is constantly influenced by one another? Is it difficult there then to figure out, you know, well, turns out Daniel's a little worse at defense than Henrik, or how do you adjust for certain things like that?
Yeah, they're definitely a rare case, and Matt Cain, fellow Hockey Graphs writer and Winners U analyst with me, you know, pointed out, and he had a good thread on it, that, you know, it does run into issues with the Sedins, who play upwards of, you know, 90-95% of their time on the ice is spent together. So I'm gonna try some things to maybe tweak that and help with their specific case, but, you know, I think that says more about the Sedins probably than it does about the stat itself, because they're such a unique case, you know, Swedish twins who spent their whole lives playing together, that it definitely makes things tougher for the stat, or just the regression, to separate the two, because they're never separated. But there's a few things we're going to try out, like maybe adding a variable that just is for both of them when they're both on the ice and splitting up credit that way. It's going to require some tweaking, but, and maybe we'll look at other pairs who play a lot together. But in terms of, you know, year over year, just the same pairing together, they're, you know, they're in a world of their own.
Yeah, that's just it. And I'm assuming it doesn't have any issues with similar pairings like a Marchand Bergeron. Or something like that, where it's guys who play frequently but have enough time apart.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, I'm going to test it out with those two, because that's kind of like the tier two of that, always playing together. I'm confident it's doing an okay job with that, but, you know, there's something to test out further, because obviously, like, Patrice Bergeron rates out really well in expected plus minus, both offensively and defensively. And Marchand doesn't do so great defensively. So maybe that's him not getting enough credit because he plays so much with Bergeron. But that's something I'm going to take a look at and see maybe if some tweaking I can get him some extra credit for, you know, because he does play a fair bit with Bergeron, but it's not quite Sedin-like.
That'd be an interesting case no matter what the outcome. We've kind of touched on it here. What sort of level of importance would you place on expected plus minus when comparing it to, you know, even just score adjusted or score zone and venue adjusted possession metrics? Do you think that expected plus minus is maybe regressing it to a better state where you get a more accurate version of events, or would you recommend looking at both?
I think you probably want to look at both, especially because expected plus minus, I add what's called a Bayesian prior, but basically going into a season or a game or something, whatever the new data I'm feeding into the model, it already knows some information about each player, which helps stabilize the model. So it XPM is more like an identifier of player talent than it is just a clear representation of, you know, what happened. So, like, the way So it's a regression, so it's not an exact, relaying of what happened compared to maybe just, players' Corsi 4 percentage. And you can say, look, these are just numbers. Like, this is the shots that happened while he was on the ice and off the ice, and it's just a pure number on its own. Whereas XPM and the coefficients, there is some influence from prior seasons, so it's more. And they do adjust, they're not just the same number year after year. You'll see players trend down and up. But part of the regression is it tries to more accurately nail down a player's true talent level. So it's slowish to, recognize new good players. Like, I know some people are surprised the rookies haven't ranked higher this year, but it's been about half a year now. So as the year goes on, those players' ratings will get higher. But it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
Would you call it sort of the next version or an upgrade on Birch's Delta Corsi?
Yeah, I definitely think so. Birch's was, it was a good next step incorporating that, but I still think it was a little too, it wasn't granular enough, I would say. Whereas, you kind of want something that works at the play-by-play data level, where you're kind of giving the regression raw data they can then make judgments from, whereas Birch's uses, the final product. So it was feeding the quality of time on ice metric into a regression, whereas in expected plus minus, it has a dummy variable for each player. So it'll account for each player on the ice for each shift and doesn't make, quality of time on ice is basically an average of the quality of your teammates, whereas XPM looks at each shift and knows each player who's on the ice for each shift, and it accounts for it all at once.
There's a number of players. You kind of touched on it there with the rookies in your stat. Some fare perhaps worse than we'd think, but there are other names. I think of an Oscar Klefbom who fares a lot better than I might have imagined when I first introduced myself to that player in particular. Do you think this says more about the way that perhaps we're evaluating players, or that something's going unnoticed when we're watching hockey, that we're just not seeing the underlying talent that some of these players have?
Yeah, I definitely think that's part of it. There's definitely a bias to players who don't put up, the big point totals. I think, that is still, it's still an issue that persist, even though people are aware of shot attempts and their importance. But it's much easier to see, a player, with a beautiful pass or like a great goal. That's much more tangible, and it's all over the news and stuff like that, and people see it, and it's much more easy to identify that than a player who does a good job of breaking the puck out or denying a zone entry or something like that. And where over the long run, those things can be pretty similarly valuable, but one is definitely less appreciated. And I think it is hard to identify the nuance of the things the players do well, And especially to the human eye, it's like, oh, did the D, step up and make a nice play at the blue line because they're just that talented, or was because their partner was also out there, had a good gap, or the forward back checked hard. So that's kind of when you need a good sample size with these things. But it's also, it is difficult to the human eye, and everyone has their biases that, kind of cloud their judgment of players.
Just thinking about that first pass, Ryan and I kind of talked about this a bit, which was in soccer they have expected goals models that are based on shots and also based on passes. When his research reaches a point where it's consistently up to date and being put out each season as the games go by, whether that's because of tracking or RFID chips, whatever it is, once we have that information, do you think there will be a place in hockey for passing-based expected goal models, or do you think we'll continue to be shot-based?
No, I definitely think you can have passing expected goals. And I know in soccer they have ones called open play models, I'm pretty sure, which don't use any shots at all. They ignore the shot entirely, but kind of, say, a shot happened, but it's all about how fast the run-up was and stuff like that. Like, I do believe, there's been a little pushback I've seen from people who say, oh, no, expected goals, we've tried this before, it's not as good as just, score adjusting Corsi or whatever. And I think the real issue with that, as I talked about, I don't know if I talked about this before, but it's because and I'm not sure how many people know this, but for expected goals on blocked shots, the, you know, the location data and stuff like that is extremely unreliable just due to how the NHL tracks it. So we actually have slightly less data points. I should say slightly. It's a probably a good size, a good chunk of data that is less for expected goals due to having, you know, less shots available to examine and put a value on. So that probably feeds into why, you know, it's so, it's close-ish between expected goals and, you know, score-adjusted Corsi right now. But going forward, you know, as there's more information made available, if whenever tracking data happens, when that next wave comes, expected goals will be what people look at. I think, you know, you have something like soccer that has so much data available. They use expected goals for a reason, because it, of the information that it provides beyond just looking at raw shot numbers.
And that kind of answers my next question, which was, you know, expected goals is just about as predictive as score-adjusted Corsi. What do you look at first when you're evaluating a player now?
It's typically my own stuff, my wars, and then I'll, you know, then I'll do my thing where I'll dig deeper into them and kind of say, like, how does this stack up to other players? What components? Were they strong and weak? Is this a trend? You know, is this just a one-off year where something weird happened with them? And then, you know, if it's a, so let's say, you know, if I don't have that, or if I'm looking at a player with, you know, limited sample of games that I don't have, like, you know, multiple years on, I'll probably look at relative to teammate statistics, because I think that's probably the next thing out there that's kind of XPM light, I would say, and something I compared it to. And then primary points I look at as well. And then, you know, I've made this point a couple times about points, but points are tough to look at. And I think, you know, a lot of people make judgments off of them, but, you know, we have all these rules, not rules, but for Corsi and stuff, we try to make all these adjustments, like, oh, they play with good teammates, they play hard competition. But when you get down to points, they don't, you know, no one really talks about it. You know, it says, you don't, no one's discounting anyone on the Sharks' goals totals because they play with Joe Thornton. And say, it's like, well, you don't actually deserve that many goals. You know, that's just Joe creating them for you. So when in reality, Joe is probably creating a lot of that, you know, because he's such a good passer. So there's, I think stuff like that in Ryan's passing data will definitely be able to help going forward, provide more context to those statistics, because I think context with that stuff is severely lacking right now.
And how do you look at a player like Joe Thornton with regards to especially goals above replacement? How do you look as much into something like that because you know he's less of a goal scorer than he is a playmaker? Do you look at war first because you've got that idea in your head that, you know, this is what he does and these numbers will show up more here? How would you suggest people use those stats when looking at players like, you know, a Backstrom or a Thornton?
Yeah, no, I definitely, you know, part of my war, so the war, so the even strength part, so the offense and defense, I'll specify offense here. It's a blend of expected plus minus, XPM, and what I have called box plus minus. And so box plus minus will take into account, you know, what their assist rate is, what their scoring rate is, how often they shoot it. It has a few other stats I threw in there. So it's similar to if you thought of Dom, OMG, it's Domi on Twitter's game score statistic. It's very similar to that, in which it takes those things into account. So, like, Joe, you know, does both things well. I believe he drives play really well in the direction, and he's a passer. And I think my stat, I'm not sure if Dom's agrees, is that it values passing slightly more than goal scoring, possibly just because it's more translatable. You know, goal scorers are dependent on good passers, but good passers can make, you know, good goal scorers. You know, Jonathan Chichu being a good example with Joe. But, yeah, it's the all-time example. But, so, you know, it's stuff like that that you got to dig into it. And there's also, you know, I'm not really that interested in using it for Joe. Usually stuff like that is a good, you know, confirmation that you're on the right track, that, you know, people call it like the Crosby sniff test. And, you know, like Crosby dominates you know, the offensive part of my WAR stat for, I think he's led it every year. He's been, I have it so far that he's been in the league. So, you know, that stuff helps. And Ovechkin shows up really well in the power play. But it's like, you know, you don't need to use that to, you know, maybe debate, you know, who's the best player in the league. Because I think a lot of that is still splitting hairs. I think it helps, you know, what you said with like the Oscar Klefbaums on the Oilers. And that, you know, that's the stuff I'm definitely more interested in. The players who don't have the recognition maybe, who pop out through this kind of work.
For sure. I mean, in baseball, I know it's been said numerous times, you know, if they're within a quarter of a WAR of each other, then, yeah, you know, they're probably a pretty similar player. And at that point, you know, pick your favorite, because this stat isn't really going to tell you which one is that much better. So I assume that's pretty much the same goes for yours as well. If they're within you know, a very finite amount, very short amount, you know, they're probably pretty similar.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's kind of there's a slight issue, not issue, but, you know, when you look at this stuff per 60, it's you do get into like the decimal places. So think how, you know, you look at goalie save percentages and you're debating like 0.001 or something. But so I round it to two decimals kind of for that reason, where it's like, you know, at some point you just have to cut it off and say, you know, these players are basically equal. And like, you could go to like the millionth degree of some of these decimal places, but I don't think you're gaining more information. If anything, you're just going to, you know, mislead people and try and say it's like, well, they rank higher, so they must be better, when it's like, it's an insignificant ranking. But that is something I've been trying to work on with that, is getting, you know, some error bands on these stats and just kind of, you know, be able to give that rough estimate and say, you know, their value is here, but we're 90% sure it's between these two values, what they're worth.
Yeah, and Mike McCurdy had a fantastic thread on that as well on Twitter a week or two ago. Just about, you know, if you're putting that many decimal points, it means you are certain up till that point that that is how good someone is. And we're just not that certain, especially, you know, like a goalie save percentage. We aren't certain to the thousandth degree that, you know, he is 0.0001 better than his opponent. We just don't know that with that much certainty. And so I think there's a very strong argument for using less decimal places and saying, yeah, we're pretty sure he ranks here.
Yeah, exactly. And I think Micah made a good point there, that it's, you know, there's a difference between like saying like this is their save percentage, and then you can use as many like decimals as you want. But if you're trying to say like they're this good because of their save percentage, or using something as like an indicative of talent, or, you know, something more than, trying to make it something more than just the number that it is, then you have to, you know, in all reason, cut it down.
No, I completely agree. I think that just about does it for all the questions I had for you. Thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, thanks for having me.
It's been a pleasure. If you like Dawson, or you like Ryan from last week, you can check out their podcast. They're coming back up this week when this comes out. You'll have heard their newest episode if you don't already. It's Another Hockey Podcast. You can find Dawson on Twitter at DTMAboutHeart. You can find his work with Winner's View at Ask Winner's View. You can find it at Hockey Graphs as well, hockey-graphs.com. DTMAboutHeart.blogspot as well. You still using that?
No, that's kind of getting taken over by bots right now. So I get the odd notification about that, but I have been a little lazy. But my old stuff's there, and there's some interesting stuff, I think, still up there if anyone wants to check it out. But just watch out for the comment sections. It's all bots.
And if you're a gambler, you've got DTMtheOdds.com, which is pretty useful as well.
Yeah, that's kind of just a side thing I've been working on. It started last year when I used to just post daily odds on games. I had this model, and then, you know, because I was just doing it for free on Twitter, people would DM me and say, hey, you didn't put it up today. Or I have people saying, it's like, look, I'll give you $5 if you can put it up right now or something. So I just kind of got a site thrown together for it. And it keeps me more honest in posting them every day. Well, it does keep me honest in posting them every day. So that's how it happens.
If you like betting on hockey, definitely go give that a check. Anything else you want to plug?
No, I think you got all the bases covered. Thank you for having me on.
No worries. It was a pleasure having you on. We're going to have more fantastic guests on the way. We've got Micah McCurdy coming up in the next 2 weeks or so. Carolyn Wilkie as well on the way. So some big names that I'm excited to have on. Be on the lookout for those. Our regular podcast comes out on Tuesdays as well. You can go check that out. You can find me on Twitter at Colton Prale, the podcast at GTD_podcast. All of these posted on lastwordonhockey.com and, of course, on my own Twitter as well. Hope you have a good one. We'll see you next week.